Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Transitioning to a decarbonized economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organization and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts, or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.
From the Times and the Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana.
If you watch someone you love having a bad death, that memory obliterates all the happy times. And I don't want that to happen.
Nobody likes to think about dying, until they have to. And for the former TV presenter and national treasure, Dame Esther Anson, that moment arrived when she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer.
I have, in my brain, thought, well, if the next scan says nothing's working, I might buzz off to Zurich.
When she announced that, like hundreds of British people before her, she planned to go to Dignitas, the Swiss clinic that would allow her to choose how and when she died, it reopened the national debate about assisted dying and whether it was time the UK made it legal.
I think it's important that the law catches up with what the country wants.
Dame Esther Anson's emotional appeal for a change to the law quickly garnered both public and, crucially, political support.
I can give you my commitment, Esther, absolutely, that if we are privileged enough to win the election, then we will make time for this vote. It'll be a conscience vote.
75% of the British public now support changing the law. And the Prime Minister has said he would back the legalisation of assisted dying if Parliament voted for it.
This is a big moment potentially for Dame Esther's campaign.
It would probably be the biggest social change after an election, if indeed it happened.
So how would it work? And what impact would it have on society? Well, there's one way to find out. The story today: lessons from the world's assisted dying capital.
I'm Sarah Baxter. I'm the former deputy editor of the Sunday Times. I'm now based in New York, where I'm director of the Marie Colvin Center for International Reporting at Stony Brook University.
Sarah, you've been looking at what is a really prickly subject for a lot of people. Before you did this story, what did you think of assisted dying?
I was certainly intrigued by the idea. I knew it was something that I'd probably want for myself if I had a painful, incurable illness. But it wasn't something that I necessarily wanted for everybody else. There's that whole issue of trust and the fear that if you open the door to medically assisted dying, that lots of people will be pushed out before their time. Maybe somebody wants their hands on a house, granny's money. You never know what might lead people to seek assisted dying. And I felt very uncomfortable with that idea. But at the same time, I felt, well, if it's something that I might want for myself, should it be right to feel that I wouldn't trust other people and could deny them the same right. So I have been on a bit of a journey, as they say. My ideas have been evolving, but actually I didn't have a clear idea of what I believed until I went to Canada and saw it for myself in practice.
Well, tell us about that. Why Canada? and what was it like?
Canada is the world capital of assisted dying. More people choose what they call MAID, medical assistance in death, than in any other country, although Netherlands has a slightly higher per capita number of assisted deaths. But I feel like Canada is full of close cousins. We've got an affinity with Canada. Lots of British people are there, or of British or Scottish origin. And I was intrigued to go because I think the other thing about Canada is it's got that pioneering individualism that comes with going to a new country as immigrants. It was forged, like the United States, out of immigrants. But it's also got a much more European-style welfare state. And I think that combination makes it a really good testbed for how assisted dying is working in practice.
And Sarah, to understand how it's playing out, the assisted dying law in Canada, you went to some fairly remote places to see it in action. Tell us where you were.
Well, I went to Lake Huron to meet an extraordinary British doctor called Godfrey Heathcote. Now, he's a pathologist, but he had the lovely, charming manner of a GP, incredibly reassuring, very logical. And he said, as a pathologist, he'd seen it all. He knows what's coming. And I'm sorry to say that this lovely man in his early 70s has advanced prostate cancer. He's had it before. And he went through all the radiation therapy, the chemo, and he knows he doesn't want to go through it again, that the outcome would not probably be terribly good anyway. And therefore, he feels that death is on the horizon. And the question for him is, does he embrace it on his own terms? Or does he suffer a painful death? And he's really thought it through. He's from Merseyside. He's got this lovely wife, Jackie, from Birkenhead. And her mother is 100. So it's not that they're in any hurry to bump off the elderly.
No.
So Dr. Heathcote told me, you know, it really isn't Jackie's mother's time, but he feels it is his time.
Is that particularly complicated if you're a doctor?
No, he said, well, 10 years ago, if you'd asked him how he felt about assisted dying, he would have said it's really not the job of medical practitioners to hasten people towards the end, that that's wrong. But on reflection, he's decided it really is the right thing for him. And he's actually religious. And there's a number of opponents. In fact, most opponents in Canada are religious.
Yeah.
He comes from a Catholic background. He's still an Anglican. He wants his pastor to be at his side.
And he's able to sort of somehow marry the idea of religion with the idea of taking your own life.
Yes, well, when he thinks about his eternal future, he says he sometimes wonders what's going to happen when he crosses over to the other side, you know, when he's at the pearly gates, because he does believe in some form of an afterlife. Mm. And he's not sure how whoever's up there might regard his decision, but he is at peace with it. He explained to me that his daughter's a wildlife biologist who lives in the Yukon, which is on the other side of Canada, right up by the Arctic Circle. And he'd love her to be there towards the end. It would give him time to summon his family, to have everybody that is nearest and dearest around him. He's planned out his funeral, what the words might be. He wants a bamboo coffin, and he wants his pastor there. And the other important thing to remember, that in Canada, by law, on your final day, you have to request assisted dying all over again. You can plan for it in advance, but you can't then have it without reconfirming your decision. So the idea is that you are in charge all the way through. And even if you're in, you know, considerable pain or you have trouble expressing yourself, you can use gestures, but it's much better to speak clearly and say, this is what I want.
I mean, it sounds so oddly rational. You know, he's made all these plans. He knows exactly when he's aiming for, when his daughter is around. You know, it's the sort of thing you would plan in your diary. He knows what it'll look like, what the funeral will be like. Is he pleased that he's in Canada at this stage in his life rather than in Britain? Because obviously that wouldn't be a possibility here.
Yes, he told me he was so pleased to be living in Canada that in Britain his only option would be to go to Dignitas in Switzerland. And he said in his condition, that would be tantamount to cruel and inhuman treatment. So Dr. Heathcote was very clear that the decision to go to Canada many moons ago not only worked out for him and his family, but that it was really, really helpful at this moment of need as he faces death.
Now he can have his daughter with him rather than if he'd ended up at Dignitas.
Exactly. And he's not in great pain, but he's very weak. He says he needs to sleep a lot. He finds it hard to move. You know, when I saw him, he'd made a big effort. He'd had a nap first. I was really grateful. So to me, he was like just a lovely chap sitting on a sofa. But I think he finds his days difficult. And the thought of having to get on a plane and get to Switzerland just would have been awful.
You'd spoken to a practitioner who carries out these deaths. I think for a lot of people listening here, there's something that feels slightly wrong about it. You know, like, does it jeopardise the Hippocratic Oath? How does he talk about it? How does he justify it?
Yes, so the maid practitioner that I spoke to is called Dr. Eric Thomas, and he's quite an activist on behalf of medically assisted dying.
In terms of procedures, the number of procedures I've done is 459.
It's a lot.
Well, it is a lot, yeah.
Is that more than most, would you say?
It is more than most, yeah.
In Canada? Or more than most in
Missouri? More than most in Canada.
Somebody who's carried out nearly 500 assisted deaths, which sounds almost like Dr. Harold Shipman's numbers.
I was going to say, I mean, that's quite alarming here.
Yes, that's a lot of deaths, but he really does feel he's performing a service. And one of the things that he said is that when he went into this field, he didn't even want to tell his mother about it, that nobody wanted to speak about assisted death. It was like Voldemort, he said, citing the Harry Potter villain. And so, in some ways, I was very curious to meet him and probably a little bit more sceptical about his motives than about the motives of people who choose to have assisted death. Who would choose to be the practitioner? So I did ask him about that. He explained to me how he had seen a patient as a young man die in a Catholic hospital without much morphine even, on the basis that that might hasten their death and that you shouldn't interfere with God's will. And it had made him rather against the whole idea. So he definitely wasn't religious, unlike Dr. Heathcote.
So we go and see this woman. She, whatever she was, in her 50s. And there she was. She was all by herself. And she was in the worst state of suffering and pain that you can imagine. Oh. And I thought, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. Is what I thought at the time. You know, how can anyone have that much suffering? How can this happen?
I spoke to his wife, who said that she was a little afraid that there might be some stigma attached.
Mm.
But in fact, she'd found the contrary and that people were quite eager and open to talk to him about it. And his patients are grateful.
Coming up, how exactly does the law work? And what lessons can the UK learn from Canada? That's after this.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Transitioning to a decarbonized economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organization and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.
Tell us a bit about how this law works in Canada. I mean, who is allowed to apply for an assisted death? Is it open to everybody? And how does the consent work?
They brought in legislation in 2016 permitting MAID for the first time. Since then, critics have argued that Canada's been on a dreadful slippery slope. The number of assisted deaths have been going up by leaps and bounds, really by 30% a year. And that's been alarming critics who say, well, see, you can't trust people not to be bumped off before their time. The Pope actually came to Canada in 2022 and said that people needed love and support rather than being hastened to their death. And he spoke about concerns that it would affect, in particular, the poor and the marginalised. There's this idea that somehow you're going to save money if you euthanise people. Mm. And the Pope really spoke to those fears.
Uccidere. Dobbiamo accompagnare alla morte, ma non provocare.
I would point out that the right to care and treatment for all must always be prioritized, so that the weakest, particularly the eldest and the sick, are never discarded.
Cura per tutti, affinché i più deboli.
And it's interesting, in Canada, a number of First Nations leaders, Indigenous leaders, are also opposed to MAID. Canada has a big immigrant population. Muslims and Hindus are not in favour of MAID. Not every segment of society favours MAID. But, of course, there's a counter-argument too, that the more people know that it's available and know that it's an option, the more they want it for themselves.
Mm.
Well, one of the reasons critics rail against medically assisted death is because the eligibility rules keep expanding. So when the law was introduced, it only applied to people who had a reasonably foreseeable terminal illness. Their death was definitely foretold. So you were likely to die in the next 6 months, say. Now, in 2021, the law was expanded to include people whose death could not be reasonably foretold or foreseen, but who nevertheless had a very painful, incurable illness. And
right. It has to be incurable.
It has to be incurable in the sense that your condition is not going to change. But of course, opponents of euthanasia, which of course made people don't like using the term euthanasia, but opponents of euthanasia would say, well, what does that mean for people who have disabilities? Now, so far, only about 500 people have chosen MAID who are in this position, because the law is still fairly recent. But I did speak to somebody called Jill Bodak, whose father passed away as one of these cases. And it was very interesting because her father, Bill Bodak, was a very fit man, very outdoors man, lived in Thunder Bay, which is truly remote, far more remote than Lake Huron. And he had a catastrophic skiing accident, which left him paralysed with a severe stroke. And at first, he was so severely damaged that he couldn't even consent to MAID, let alone think about it, because he did not have the mental acuity to make that decision.
Hmm.
But he recovered. He got much better than doctors expected. He retrieved some cognitive abilities, language abilities. He could walk with assistance. He was not his old self, shall I say.
Mm.
But he still had severe challenges. He went through a year of trying to get better. His family dropped everything to care for him. They really did. They did their absolute utmost to support him. We're not talking about families who are thinking, oh, well, this is most inconvenient and why don't you just choose maid dad? His wife, his ex-wife, who was divorced, rushed to his side. His two daughters and a son rushed to help him. But after a year of really trying to get better, he felt it's not working. He'd probably made the maximum progress. And he said to his daughter, Jill, I've tried, but I just can't get any better. Mm. And at that point, he was compos mentis enough to choose maid and voluntarily ended his life. But it's perfectly possible that he could have gone on for 10 years or more in that condition. He just didn't want to. And that's how the law has expanded.
So it doesn't have to be that death is likely to happen within a year or even two.
Yes,
it's much more open-ended.
It doesn't have to be fairly imminent. And now the really controversial bit is that this law that Jill Bodock's father was able to benefit from was supposed to extend to the mentally ill right now in March this year. And it's just been kicked into touch because Canadians don't feel they're ready for it.
We would seek the delay of the expansion of medical assistance in dying to people whose sole underlying medical condition is a mental illness. Today, after negotiating with parliamentary colleagues and listening to Canadians, we are doing just that.
I think it's going to come back in 2027. Really? So this will be upon us before we know it.
So this hasn't gone away?
No.
I would have thought it was surprising it was even being suggested.
Exactly. I mean, this definitely made me very uneasy.
It's such a difficult subject. So would the expansion of the laws, just to clarify, would it mean that if you're mentally ill or mentally disabled in some way, you would have the same right as anybody else if you had an incurable disease to ask for assisted death? Or does it mean that you could ask for assisted death because you're mentally ill?
Well, that's still a grey area that is being thrashed out, and that's one of the problems. I imagine that if you're mentally ill and your death is reasonably foreseen, that would be an easier decision than to just say, I can't go on living with this challenge. But then here's another tricky decision that Canada's probably going to have to face, not yet, but it's coming down the road, perhaps in a few years' time. What MAID in Canada doesn't address is the condition of people with dementia or Alzheimer's.
Ah.
Now, the Alzheimer's Society in Canada wants to see advanced directives because, again, there's that question of equal treatment. If you have Alzheimer's and you've got a painful, incurable disease, shouldn't you have the same right to MAID as everybody else? I don't think the Alzheimer's Society in Canada came to that decision lightly, but they do argue in favour of that. And I can see why, because if you have dementia, it doesn't mean you're not in any pain.
No.
But it does mean that you do not have the mental acuity to give consent.
So how would that work? The advanced directives, would you write out your wishes and would it be almost like sort of people who make it very clear that they want their organs to be donated at a certain point? You know, who would define which day was the day when you couldn't go on anymore?
Well, you've just hit the nail on the head there. It's still got a very difficult road ahead for that reason. But the idea would be that you would write a living will.
I mean, how is it viewed in Canada now? They've had a few years of this MAID law of assisted dying. How do they view it?
Well, it's got extraordinary levels of support. The most recent poll showed that about 77% of Canadians support assisted dying. And it's interesting that there's a consensus on the issue. So, for example, at the moment, Canada has a Liberal government under Justin Trudeau. But the Conservative Party is having a bit of a resurgence, a bit of a populist resurgence under Pierre Poilievre. And he has not opposed MAID. But what he has opposed is any move to extend it to the mentally ill.
Hmm.
So That's the distinction there. But of course, not every liberal parliamentarian wants to extend it to the mentally ill either. But there's much more consensus over this issue than when it was first introduced, because I think people think that it is actually working.
Ah, so they've seen it in operation.
There are some disgruntled families who feel that their loved one perhaps chose to die when they should have been offered more help or made too speedy a decision. So you can find critics of MAID, but I think most people tend to believe that it's being responsibly exercised in the way that Dr. Godfrey Heathcote is trying to.
I think for a lot of people who think about the question of assisted dying, there's also just the sense of, is it less painful than the alternative? You know, what is the experience actually like?
Well, I think the experience, I was told, is peaceful and predictable. You die within 3 minutes. First of all, you get given a sort of relaxing drug to make you feel a little bit more at ease. And then a massive dose of propofol, which is the sort of anesthetic, really. Michael Jackson, the singer, overdosed on propofol. And it kills you very rapidly, but gently. So obviously, Dr. Godfrey Heathcote hasn't gone through the experience, but I think he knows what it will involve. He's very clear that it won't be painful. And I spoke to Jill Bodak about how it was for her dad. It was rather moving. She said her dad said, "I feel funny." And she said, "Does it feel good?" And he said, "Yeah."
Wow.
And then he slipped away.
And Sarah, for you, having gone and spoken to so many people who either have direct experience of it, are currently preparing for it, or are practitioners who help people go through the process of assisted dying, has it changed your view? Where are you on it now?
Yeah, I've definitely become more supportive. I genuinely thought there was such a moral quandary over the issue that I didn't know where I stood. I now not only know for sure that I would like it for myself. I mean, I was thinking about Dr. Heathcote's desire to bring his family together at the end. What a wonderful idea that you could draw everybody together, especially if you're faced with a death sentence.
Is there anything in particular that we, Britain, as we're thinking about this politically, is there anything we can learn from their experience?
Well, I totally understand why Britain is nervous about changing the law. But I wonder whether it shouldn't be tested first with a pilot scheme. I think people would find that very reassuring, because what happened in Canada was, in the first year, just over 1,000 people chose MAID. And now, 8 years on, about 50,000 people have gone through MAID. And that's quite a high number. Not when you take the entire population of Canada, but nevertheless, that's a huge number of people who are choosing that decision for themselves. It has to be their own decision. And I think they were probably encouraged by what happened with the first 1,000 cases or so. So maybe what we need is a pilot that can be offered to certain select people who volunteer for MAID, and people can be reassured about how sensibly it operates in practice.
Since our recording with Sarah, we've now learnt that Dr. Godfrey Heathcote passed away a few days ago, assisted by his doctor. He was surrounded by family, his wife and three daughters, and his minister, just as he'd planned it. Thanks for listening to the story today, and thanks to my guest, Sarah Baxter, the former deputy editor of the Sunday Times. If you're interested in learning more about the subject, then do read Sarah's piece from Canada and some of the recent coverage of the debate to change the law in Ireland. You can find both at thetimes.co.uk with a subscription. The producer today was Priyanka Dalardia. The executive producers are Kate Ford and Fiona Leach, and the sound design and theme tune are thanks to Mal Lasseto. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Transitioning to a decarbonized economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organization and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.